Adam Morrison here. When it comes to top-tier contracting, my go-to choice is McGilvery Environmental. They're not just any contractor. They're the best in Spokane and North Idaho. With years of experience, they handle it all. New construction, meticulous repairs, and asphalt overlays. From start to finish, they ensure your project is completed with the highest quality end results. And here's the scoop for this year. McGilvery Environmental has expanded its services to include asphalt paving. That means top-notch commercial parking lots, residential driveways, and road construction. So, ready to kickstart your project? Reach out to Kip at McGilvery Environmental by calling 208-556-6384 for your free estimate. Don't forget to mention my name, Adam from the Perimeter, and experience the difference that McGilvery Environmental brings to the table. Again, that's 208-556-6384, McGilvery Environmental. My number one choice for all my contracting needs.
HDG Architecture is proud to be a sponsor of The Perimeter with Adam Morrison. There is another podcast that you all should be listening to, and it's called If Not Now, When? This podcast, which Josh Hsiang of HDG Architecture hosts, has a clear mission to ignite positive change within the Spokane community. On the podcast, Josh brings together diverse individuals from city officials, business owners, journalists, influencers, and big thinkers to have meaningful conversations about what we can do to help transform downtown Spokane into an even more vibrant and robust community. By talking to these movers and shakers, the podcast aims to inspire and empower its listeners by actively shaping their city's future. You can find the If Not Now, When podcast wherever you are listening to The Perimeter at, or you can find it in the description of this episode.
Welcome to The Perimeter, Season 3, Episode 9, presented by McGilvery Environmental, with producer Brennan. It's not very often we get to talk about a loss, but it's going to be on the docket here with a tough break in Seattle against the Washington Huskies, and then we're going to talk about the UConn Huskies coming up on Friday. Obviously, I'm sure you watched the game. Kind of a flashback a little bit. I'm going to dive into it. But overall, a little bit of flashback of Purdue.
Yeah.
A lot of missed shots, especially in that second half. What were your thoughts as a a fan watching the game?
I mean, I thought they, it's a tale of two halves, really. Like, they played great. I mean, they were playing good in the first half, and then they just laid an egg in the second half. And I guess on the TV, I guess I didn't see it as well. Like, what was the atmosphere like in there? Was it just, were the students just like, pretty crazy, or
it was decent, and it was a late arriving crowd, but it ended up being close to sellout or a sellout.
Yeah,
the students were decent. It's just like everything else, everything's not as hard or vile anymore.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So like they were good, but I bet you it was a lot of times their first time being to a game.
Oh, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Gonzaga, so they show up and stuff like that. And I don't think they probably had a lot of home games by that point because they played a lot of neutrals.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it was good, but it wasn't their best effort ever.
Yeah.
But it was our first true road game.
Yeah.
So I think some of that maybe had a factor into it. But, starting the game, I thought we were fantastic first half.
Yeah.
We had a good game plan. We're moving the ball, shot it well, 5 of 9 from three in the first half. Shoot 56%, 19 to 34. I just thought our energy and kind of our game plan was good. The kid, Kepnang, had the game of his life in the first half. He had 12, the big.
Yeah.
Who ended up having a great game. Didn't shoot it great in the second half, but had 5 block shots, was rebounding, 4 offensive rebounds, was all over the place. Kind of a pick and dive guy, but was, he had that spin dunk against Braden. That and-one was a nice one. He got everybody hyped up, and then he had a lob there in that first half, but just was really affecting the game, not just on the defensive. And Glass is what he's known for. I think he's only was averaging like 7 points. But we had opportunities to kind of extend that lead. We go into halftime up 6, but like throughout the course of that first half, it felt like Purdue, where our game plan was good. Mm-hmm. We were making shots. The ball was pinging. Guys were making plays, but we could never separate and get up 15. It was always 6-7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so in years past, and this, I don't, hopefully a UW fan or somebody doesn't take offense to this, but 3-4 years ago, that team would have quit in the first half.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like just the personnel they used to have, they would have just folded and you make your big lead and then they would have started playing for themselves instead of trying to come back in the basketball game in that first half. But credit to them, they cut that lead down to 6 and they kept, you know, making enough plays. Like I said, Kempang, Wheeler had a decent first half, the little point guard. The, what's the kid's name? The Mulcahy. He's has made a shot all year. He makes 2 threes in the first half. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's normally a drive first power guard. But I thought Graham looked good in the first half. Nolan looked fantastic. It was, I think it was, he was finished 1 for 6. So what's, I think he was 6 for 9. Yeah. He was 6 for 9 in the first half with 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was really rolling. It felt good too for him because he's from Seattle. Everybody knows that. And, you know, obviously you rarely get a play game at UW. He probably was pressured to go to UW or at least recruited heavy by them and didn't, you know, so that it looked like he was playing with that in the back of his mind, which is cool. There was just this kind of feeling that we could have played a lot better. Or not better, is we could extend the lead because we only had 3 first half turnovers, which has been an issue for us. I'll get into, there's a crazy stat that Huddy said on the air last night. I'll get into it in a second about turnovers. Going into that second half or at the end of the first half, I was like, man, I feel like we could be up a little bit more. But you're also like, well, we're up 6 on the road. We knew this UW's team was talented. I said that on the previous episode, and it's not just me trying to hype up the episode or the games. Like, this was a super talented, better team than they've had in the last 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. Like, a mix of, you know, shot blocker, a good guard that played at Kentucky. The Moses Wood kid played at Portland, but he was a good complimentary piece. I talked about Mulcahy, like a good power guard, and then they had the Johnson kid off the bench was good. You know, they're built better than they've been in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could see that they're like, all right, we need to have a mix of, you know, talent and then obviously 4-year guys, experience, because we got to win this year.
Yeah.
I
was going to say, like, is our problem in the second half is that we don't have depth and we don't have anyone to come in for Nimhard.
Yeah, I'll talk about that in a second.
Okay,
no,
sorry.
You're right. No, you're right. It's a good lead in. So, you know, we start the second half.
The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Hi, we're the Greens. Our family is just like any other family.
Quiet on set!
Okay, maybe not. But just like every family, we need banking solutions that work for the way we live. And ICCU has everything we need. We're looking forward to showing you how it works for us. Excuse me.
We start the second half.
Yeah.
Obviously up 6.
Yeah.
And we extended it to, I think it was 11 or 12, right about the 12-minute mark left in the game. And then they had 2 corner threes by Moses Wood. We were up 10. That's what happened. And then they cut it to 4. So that's where I think the game kind of turned on its head a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously started turning the basketball over. We didn't. I think our shot selection got a little bit out of whack. And kudos to them. They started making more plays. You know, a big stat that's kind of rare for this team, and I've talked about it, is -8 on the glass. And that really hurt us as the game wore on. They had 11 offensive rebounds. And it felt like it was one of those games that they were first to the floor, first to, like, tip balls, not that we weren't trying hard, but it felt like it was the home team was getting those plays, and you know, the role players for them were making those type of plays, which you expect on the road. But we haven't been beating that department yet this year. That's been kind of our calling card, is we're going to play defense and rebound. Obviously, we could score, but not as a high as clip as we showed in the past. But we're going to play that side of the, you know, side of the ball really well, and it's going to put us in position to win a lot. You know, so Nolan Hickman, I mentioned, was 6-9 in the first half, goes 1-for-6 in the second half. Nemhard, 4-for-10 for the game, has 12 points, 4 turnovers, 7 assists. Not terrible, not great. Anton plays all 40 minutes, 4-for-12, 13 points, 13 rebounds. I'm fine with that, 5 steals. I mentioned Graham, 8-of-14, 8 points, 6 rebounds. So if you look just straight across the board, it's not terrible, because you go Graham, 18, Watson, 13, Nemhard, 12, Hickman, 17, Ben Gregg off the bench, 11. Mm-hmm. Now, the two big ones, if you're talking about, you know, what normal production and then in a big game, and this is not to hammer the kids and they're freshmen, but Dusty has 0 and then Braden Huff has 0, but Braden only played 4 minutes. Yeah. He got in that weird foul trouble. And then I think Coach Few just didn't like the matchup with Ken Pang, so he kept him off the floor. You know, so that obviously hurt you. Dusty was great on all the floor game stuff, but just couldn't get the ball to go in the basket, and he'll turn that around. But we go 5-for-9 from 3 in the first half, and I, you know, obviously we have a 6-point lead, and the team energy I just talked about was great. 0-for-9 in the second half.
0-for-9, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those situations, obviously just couldn't get anything to go. Another second half stat, 1 assist, 9 turnovers.
Jesus.
So it was 10-3 at halftime, and it ended 11 assists, 12 turnovers. So down the stretch, it's got to be said that we didn't make great decisions. Some of them were, you know, I try not to be a hypocrite. Some of them were the downhill turnovers I talk about that are okay. But in the context of the game, when the game wore on, like I said, after that 12-minute mark, we creep into the under 8. You know, I was always taught to me it's called winning time. You know, when the game's close, you got to be tightened up. You got to come to jump stops and all that, you know, all that little stuff. It matters. You got to box out. We just didn't make some of those plays. I mean, there was that Nemhard had that 2 charges in the second half. He had that one where it was a kick out to Ben Gregg. Ben should have shot it a 3, turned it down for some reason, swung it, and then he ripped left hand side going baseline. You remember, he just pushed off on the guy, and it was like completely obvious. Like, well, you can't even argue that one. And then he had the one where he drove baseline and he tried to throw the like hard bounce pass in the paint to Graham, which is a catchable ball, but is a 4-foot like one hopper. It's the only way he'd get it off, but it's like, I don't think Graham can catch that ball.
Yeah.
And it showed.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
And he turned it over. And then the late one was the, you know, the backbreaker was Nolan tried to feed Graham on that long bounce pass from top down. And actually it hit his hand. So I'm going to be like, man, he kind of have to catch that.
Yeah.
But also, you know, to be fair, Graham, you know, he's fighting for a position. He's got one hand on somebody else. Like, that's a harder ball to catch, even though it hits your hand. So like, it's some of that, sometimes it's KYP, not that he can't catch, and then also like situation, like refs aren't gonna call anything, so if you throw this, it has to be like 100%er.
Yeah.
So, you know, turnovers, you know, and then 0-for-9 from 3 just really killed us. And then here's the stat of the night. In the last 8 minutes, 1 field goal, and that was the Graham and one where he got lucky. The guy fouled him like way after the shot. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And it got it kind of kept us in the game, like with 1 minute left. So basically, we went 8 minutes with 0 field goals. Yeah. We had a stretch where we went 3-for-19 from the floor.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't score. And what was the frustrating part? It's not the shooting. It's the fact, I think we were about 6:30 into the second half that we were in the bonus. And we didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're struggling as a player and as a crew, you know, and Fiui always stresses this, and all great coaches do, is like foul pressure and like rip and go and get into guys' hips and make mm-hmm. them foul you. You know, mm-hmm. if they show hard on ball screens, like as a guard, I teach my daughter's team to do it, and it's, it applies to, you know, any type of basketball. Just get into the big's hips and make them call it. Most of the time they're out of position.
Yeah.
Or after you start doing it, they kind of get out of your way, so then you can turn the corner. Mm-hmm. So, but it creates that foul pressure when mm-hmm. you're getting hard shows on a ball screen. And that's what they were doing with Kempang most of the time, is either one hard show, or if they got into a drop, you know, you could go at them at downhill. But anyway, so second half obviously killed us. Just didn't make enough shots, didn't make enough plays. Costly turnovers. And the frustrating part about that game was UW tried to give it back to us like mm-hmm. a few times. Like they had some really bad empty possessions themselves. They threw two ISOs to Kempang. Like I mentioned, he had a great game in the first half, but he's not an ISO guy. And it was mm-hmm. like, oh, thank you. And he threw up some bad shots. And we were like, so, you know, on the broadcast, I'm like, all right, here we go. Mm-hmm. And we'd come down and either couldn't get a shot off or didn't get a quality one off. And it obviously, you know, came to bite us. So I think it was 16 straight Pac-12 wins, which is insane.
That is insane.
And it always is kind of funny to, when I've heard that stat, because remember how many years people's like, they wouldn't win anything in the Pac-12. Right. I hear that all the time. Yeah. Like, it's like, well, we won 16 in a row. Like, and usually we're playing your top half on to schedule games. We're not scheduling like Cal.
Right.
Just to go play a Pac-12 team mm-hmm. or Oregon State or somebody. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
let's just calm down there, bud. You know, and then it was, I believe it was 8 straight against UW. So mm-hmm. 2 streaks that went down. But obviously UW was way more talented than they have been in the past. Or not talented, I guess, is team talented as far as like doing the right things, trying to win the right way, playing defense, all those things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know it sounds funny, but like, they've had some talent in the past and this, multiple regimes, and they, sometimes they just don't have the makeup where they believe in what the coaching staff's saying, and they kind of just fly off the handle and mm-hmm. kind of do their own thing. And once you like box out and do all the little stuff, they just kind of pack it up and move along.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was kind of not expected, but you were like, well, they're going to UW it real quick, and they tried to. They did. I mean, yeah, and no, that's not sure. a knock, man. This is it used to be like a really good program. I think Hopkins is going in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they've always had like really like NBA ready guys, and then you look at their record, they're 16-12. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you're always like, what the heck? This year they're like trying to do the right stuff,
mm-hmm.
and so in that regard, it's kind of refreshing. You know, obviously we want to win, but. I think it's going to be one of those games we look back that we, man, we could have had that one.
Yeah.
You know, Purdue kind of felt like that, but you're like, well, you're playing the number of top 5 team in the country and, you know, 7-4 guy. You know what I'm saying? So that one, you're like,
Is like, I remember I mentioned earlier about them being tired, but then I also thought of like, at the end of the game, are guys just kind of young and undisciplined?
Well,
and that's
okay,
why...
so, I'm glad you brought up the fatigue factor, because I wasn't trying to cut you off when you first asked that. So I think it is a real thing that, you know, you look down, Nembhard plays 39:51, so all at 9 seconds, and then Nolan plays 40 flat.
Yep.
Dusty in that game put 27, but he's been playing in the, you know, 32s to 35s.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot for a freshman. Anton played 40, but I think he could do that, and he needs to be on the floor in that type of game, so that doesn't bother me. But I think it's a real, not concern, or it's a real logical point to bring up, that if they're playing that many minutes, maybe down the stretch, that's why they're the turnover prone or not making mm-hmm. shots. I mean, it's got to be said. Now, what's the counter to that? June, which he could play a little bit on the perimeter. He played 9 minutes in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Had 2 points, 2 for 3 from, he got fouled on a 3-point attempt. Or Luka Krenovic. So I think, you know, last night we played Mississippi Valley and those guys played a ton.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good. They're going to have to be serviceable. Doesn't mean you have to light the world on fire, but I think Luka's the guy, in my opinion, just to play, let's say, 3 to 4 minutes a half. So you get him 8 minutes a game. I know it doesn't sound like a ton, but then you take Ryan or Nolan off the floor or half each mm-hmm. during that run, and then they are down to 36, 35 minutes a night.
Right.
And then you can legitimately give them a longer rest. Now, devil's advocate, the counter to that is my junior year I was probably 38 and a half. Mm-hmm. How tired can you be when there's like six TV timeouts?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Like that's a legitimate counter. But for the longevity of the season, I think that is a logical argument. Like those guys need to get off the floor a little bit. Now, another counter to that, if they make those shots down the stretch, yep. What a great win. This team has figured it out.
Totally.
Even though we're 7-2, but like they first road, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like it could go either way.
Yeah.
And look how tough these guys are playing heavy minutes. So sometimes it's all about it if the ball's going in the hoop.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always have to remember that aspect of when you're, you know, looking at how the team's managed, I guess, or the substitution patterns. If the shots go in, then they're genius. Look how tough they are. They play forever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I think it's one of those that the question has to be garnered when we start West Coast Conference. How do we look like leg-wise then, mm-hmm. if that makes sense? But it is a real concern. I think the answer is Luka. Not that I don't like June, but he's not a guard.
Mm-hmm.
But he can also steal minutes on the perimeter. He did okay in that game. He got yanked. He made a dumbass play in the second half. It's dumb. They threw it to Kempang on the strong side, and he went to double. You never double from the strong side unless you're like doing a full rotation and you know it's coming. That's rare that you do that, because usually a good coach won't put the guy entering the ball as a crappy shooter unless they're going to full rotate. It's just dumb. Anyway, he got back cut for a layup on that play, mm-hmm. and then Fuey yanked it for us again. But it was also like, you can't make that. It's just like basketball 101 at this level, man. Like Graham had Kempang at like 14 feet and they're playing 1-on-1. He had him like squared up. He wasn't going anywhere. And he like tried to go dig down, and it was just like, boop, layup, you know what I mean? And then yank. Dusty came right back in. So like, my point is when guys don't play, sometimes they make a egregious mistake that even if you're a freshman, you can't make.
Yeah.
So if people are watching and wondering, sometimes that's the excuse, agree with it or not. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a freshman, you can't like do that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't know that.
I was on the hype train for June when he came came to Gonzaga, and I watched him closely when he gets in games, and I feel like every time he gets in, he is forcing it. Like I think
he's trying too much, and now that's easy to you know, talk about, but I think he's trying to make a play every single time.
Yeah.
And so I think the game will come to him. He's supremely athletic. I think the tools are there. He just has to slow down, but also like it's easier said than done when you don't know the language. That's a real barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Spanish to English where you can pick up some of it. You know what I'm saying? Like Korean to English is a whole different alphabet and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously. So that part has got to be difficult. And then I think the hype of it was kind of unfair to the kid because he had a good tournament and won FIBA thing.
Right.
Like, all right, cool. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, he had a good tournament. So I think he has to, you know, I think the expectations need to be tempered a little bit for him.
That's very fair.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just, and then, you know, wait till next year. Or maybe he makes an impact, but I just think he's always trying to come in and it's like, I got to make a play. And it's not a bad thing, but also sometimes you like, you know, like he's probably like, I gotta go steal a ball from this guy, the poop layup, now you're sitting the rest of the game.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, no man, just be solid, and then usually good things start to come your way. You know, catch the ball and just reverse it, go get a rebound, you know, and then things start happening your way. So I think fatigue factor in the backcourt is a logical what if or why for some of the second half, you know, mishaps. The stat I was teasing earlier, Huddy said it on, and I forgot the exact number, but the just is good enough. So there's like, I think there's like 90 something turnovers, 90 to 100 turnovers this year. And in the first half, there's 30 something. In the second half, there's like 60 to 70 something.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It's a second half turnover issue. And B Mike actually brought it up in one of the interviews. It was either after Pine Bluff. Yeah, it was after Pine Bluff, or the UW game. So it's crazy to even think that.
That is crazy.
It's a glaring issue that obviously the staff knows about, is going to try to correct. But yeah, so it's something to watch as the fans, you know, listening in or watching games is, you know, obviously you got to play tighter in the second half, but that's like holy smokes stat. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, wow. So yeah, I mean, again, I think hopefully this is where you become a UW fan and hopefully they have a good rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. So then it looks like a better loss. We didn't really move in the polls, which I was kind of shocked. We go 7-10. I'm like, I thought we'd be to like 12 or 15.
Yeah.
Not that it matters, but I was just kind of shocked. Didn't, weren't you? It was like,
I was, yeah. It's been, we
barely moved.
The rankings have been, I think a lot of teams have, well, Arizona hasn't lost. Houston hasn't lost. There's this, yeah, I honestly, but then there's other teams in the middle that have been losing. Like Colorado State lost to, St. Mary's beat Colorado State.
St. Mary's, yeah.
So, like, and that was good. I mean, that's good for us, like, because we need St. Mary's to be good this year.
Yeah. Bad.
Yeah. So,
yeah, the league's not very good. This is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about the WCC this year. Like, I thought the loss was unfortunate, but, like, at the same time, like, WCC doesn't look very strong this year. And in the games where we are favored, like, we're killing teams.
Yeah.
But, like, we're playing, you know, Mississippi Valley State, Arkansas Pine Bluff. Like, I think all these teams would be, like, bottom in the WCC.
They're in the 300s RPI Ken Palm, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, all in all, it was one of those games where you didn't play good and had chances to win, so you can look at that as a positive. But, if we make a few shots and don't turn the ball over, we win that game. So it was unfortunate, but, hats off to UW. And I've said it on the radio and probably said one of those episodes. It's good for the state that rivalry is still going.
Yeah.
And the fact that they play home and homes, which I like, instead of just a dumbass neutral.
Yeah.
For these two schools. You know what I'm saying? Because you'd easily be like, play us in the arena and we'll play at Climate Pledge. Like, it's just, you miss out on the kind of the home court deal and the students and stuff like that. So I respect Coach Hopkins and that program for doing that because they don't have to. And I think a lot of rivalries now are kind of not as good because of that. And you're missing out on the aura of what college basketball can be is, you know, playing tough road games and good student sections instead of just let's go to a neutral and play each other when it's half empty, even though we sold 10,000 tickets. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's still like the cool. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, so anyway, moving on to the other Huskies.
Yeah, no kidding.
Coming up. If you're just listening, we beat Mississippi Valley State by 35 or something. So I'm not even going to talk about that game. It's stupid. We get a weird game. We play UW Saturday, then we play Mississippi Valley this Monday, so yesterday.
Yeah.
I always call them a get-right game, and it was nice that most people scored who played and things like that. But this UConn team, I think, is five right now?
They're ranked number five.
Absolutely tough as nails, everything you'd expect.
Just
played a decent schedule, just beat Indiana by 20, beat Texas by 10. Only losses at Kansas by 4. Mm-hmm. Had a chance to win that game, and then beat North Carolina by 11. And they played Pine Bluff and Mississippi Valley, so I guess we can't laugh at ourselves as much.
Yeah,
playing those games. But yeah, extremely, extremely physical. Coach Hurley's got a great deal going on there. They got three guys averaging over 15, another guy almost averaging 14. So they're top heavy on the scoring, but well balanced, 17, 15, 8, 15, 6, 13, 2. Their leading scorer, Tristan Newton's fantastic, having a great season, shooting 48%, 35 from three, 83 from the line, seven rebounds a game. You know, they're well balanced. Cam Spencer is shooting almost 50%, 45 from three on volume, 90 from three, or excuse me, 90 from free throw, 15.8 points a game. So they got well balanced scoring. The weird part about this game is, you know, it's quote unquote a rematch, and I get that's why they promote it, but there's like so much turnover on both rosters. It's going to be like looking at two different teams. You know what I'm saying? Playing from last year.
I forgot to print off the stats for you last year, but like, I mean, if everyone remembers last year's matchup in the Elite Eight, like it was Drew Timmy got fouled, get in trouble like in the very beginning of the second half, and like it had four fouls, and like it was kind of over.
Yeah, then. The game. Yeah. Yeah. And they were obviously, they won the national championship, and they were a buzzsaw, and they were, you know, rolling. But it looks like Coach Hurley's got the same, you know, type of style. You know, they play really good defense. They peel switch a lot. Peel switch is kind of a new term where you're just based off the action. I don't know how to explain it besides showing it, but based off the actions of what they run, you just kind of just switch right away, and then you teach downhill switching too, and it makes it really difficult to run a lot of your base actions offensively. We were good at it probably the years with like BC and Rui. We were like elite at it. Remember those teams?
Yeah.
Like we just switched fucking everything and nobody could run nothing. That's what they try to do. We can't do that as much anymore because we have, you know, Graham, Braden. Yep. Not that, you know, they're just more traditional bigs. Our wave action, our pressure releases are going to be highly important. Our, counters to switching are going to be important. You have them in offense, but you're going to have to be able to get through those. The glass is going to be a big thing. Like I mentioned, UW, we lose by 8 on the glass, which hasn't happened all year. We haven't lost a rebounding battle, so that's going to be massive for us. They are plus 13 on the glass, 42 to 28, 41.9. It's going to be a rock fight. And
yeah,
the last time we played at Climate Pledge, we got killed. It was against Alabama.
It was Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, and remember that game? We got beat by like 20 early. Was just like a dead. I felt bad too. There's a big atmosphere and we just got cooked.
Yeah.
So hopefully the gym is more kind to us, or the arena. It's a fantastic arena if you've never been to it. I've never been to it for anything but that, but I need to go to a Kraken game or something, but really up to date and all that Seattle Tech stuff. You know what I mean?
I would say if anyone's going over there, it's such a cool place. I went to a Kraken game and then a Wu-Tang concert the next day.
Oh, nice.
Got to have like two different experiences there. And the atmosphere is like, for the hockey games, at least is unreal, but like it's just like, and it's kind of this, everything's kind of right on top of each other, because like it's pretty small arena, so it's like there's not a bad seat in the house.
Yeah, I think that's what most arenas are going for now, is like smallest footprint, obviously.
Yeah,
I'm a pledge, but like, you know, just even like, I don't know how you describe it, you know, like land mass or whatever.
Yeah,
footprint, and then like, you know, if you're in the top level, you still should feel like you're at a good game. You know what I mean? Not nosebleed. So
totally.
I had that same feeling when I was just walking around. I was like, man, this looks really like super nice. And they did a good job of keeping it smaller. I think smaller venues are better at all levels for sports. Like when there's more atmosphere, it's more fun. This is going to be a fantastic game. We're going to have to get up and down and play at our pace is going to be one of the biggest things. They're holding opponents to 63 a night. They're scoring 87. They're shooting 50, almost 51%, and 51% and holding opponents to under 40, which is fantastic. They're not a great three-point shooting team, shooting 33%, but they shoot a ton of them. They shot 265 in 10 games, so that's obviously, what, 26 a game?
Yeah.
So they shoot a ton of them, and that's a great equalizer. So we're going to have to guard the line and, you know, be able to rebound the basketball. But, like I said, plus 14 on the glass, 18 assists per game. That's good. Turnovers under 10. That's really good. Seven steals a game. That's really good. Six blocks a game. That's really good. I mean, this is going to be their biggest test. And, you know, besides Kentucky and, in theory, San Diego State, obviously we just mentioned St. Mary's, but they got to really turn it around. This is one of the only, you know, ones remaining that can be like a quad one, you know, booster for you for your NCAA tournament resume. But it's nothing new for Gonzaga having to have a big tournament game in December. Mm-hmm. And that's been us for 20 years.
Totally.
You know what I mean? But it's crazy basically coming off a loss. Mississippi State obviously we won, but like coming off a loss, I'm interested to see our guys, respond from that.
Yeah.
Especially going back to Seattle. So I'm really looking forward to the game, but it's going to be a really tough challenge for us. You know, all of our guys are going to have to play well. And just because they're so disciplined and they play like really hard.
Mm-hmm.
He's a yeller, but he's like, you can tell those kids like him. You know what I'm saying? And they play like stupid hard for him. And they're like another Final Four contender for sure.
100%. Yeah. No, but what do you think is like is the biggest key is this, you know, is not having a terrible, it's obviously not having a terrible second half. That's an easy key to the game, but like,
no, you can't have long droughts against this team.
Right.
So I get what you're saying. Like you can't go obviously, 3-for-19, but you can't have long stretches where you're not even scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think pace is going to be huge for us. They play quick too, but they also bog you down defensively. So we're going to have to, hopefully create turnovers and get out and run and score easy ones.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great, half court defensive team. So if you can get out and run, it'll definitely help you. But it'll be a tough challenge, man. It's gonna be a fun game. I'm excited. I like when we do. I call it the Battle in Seattle. It's not that anymore, but it's the same idea.
Totally.
We have a great fan base in Seattle. A lot of alum, and then obviously for people in Spokane, that's a 5-hour drive, knock on wood, that you make it through the pass, or a short flight, 45-minute flight. So, it's great for both the university and, whoever's playing us. And then I think we're probably going to play in Madison Square next year. I imagine that's what we do for a neutral. It's going to be a fun challenge and a fun one to play, and I'm looking forward to calling it. But I'm curious to see how we respond, like I said, to the UW loss. So
it seems like if they shoot a lot of like three throws, not getting in the foul trouble will be key as well.
Yeah. I think, obviously our backcourt can get in foul trouble, talking about how many minutes they're playing, but how much they're relied on, to be able to handle the ball and stuff. So yeah, it's a really good basketball team. I mean, like I mentioned, all these numbers I just ran off. It's just crazy. Like under 10 turnovers, plus 14 on the glass, 50%. Sounds like that's what we strive. A lot of ours look like that all the time.
Totally.
That's why you're so successful, but it's easier said than done. That's why if you have the right culture and the right teaching habits and stuff like that defensively and offensively, you can have those type of things. But the formula works to, where you're winning probably 80% of your games just off that alone. Super excited for it. Looking forward to calling it, but it's going to be a tough challenge for us. You got any listener questions?
The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, Hunter Green. Did you know that card control from ICCU lets you turn off your cards with just the tap of a button? Off? On.
Trying to pay our bills.
On.
You got any listener questions?
I got one right here that comes from Scott Linghans. I think he was kind of giving us a little dig at us talking about why is St. Mary's a good rivalry and why are we tired of the Zags versus UCLA matchup? Why can't that be like a rivalry? And
we're not in the same conference.
And that's the only thing that I would say to it. Yeah, I guess geographically we're not rivals.
Not rivals. It's just that's how it's worked out. But I think if you go ask their, I said on previous episodes, if they're people, they're like, I'm tired of playing you guys.
Yeah,
it's getting old.
Yeah, it is.
St. Mary's has St. Mary's has a history with us, and there's been a lot of good games, and yeah,
totally. I wanted to ask about, we made a comment last week about who is going to be the difference maker on the team, who has the ability to be like the top, like the leading scorer on the team, and I think it's Anton, but like I think the one thing that's been kind of coming up throughout the season is like there isn't that one guy, and
it came up in the UW game,
and like, is that going to be the kind of the Achilles heel of this team?
No, maybe it happens again, but I think if you go back and look at that game, they try to get a shot for our opportunities for Nembhard.
Mm-hmm.
Nolan had a couple floaters that he missed. They tried to throw it in a Graham, so like they kind of tried to spread it around.
Yeah,
I think. Next time in that situation, I think you get Anton at like 14 to 18 feet and let him bounce down and do that spin stuff that he does, but he'll pass if it's not there. So I think it probably is Anton.
Yeah.
You're right. Achilles heel, who knows?
Yeah.
But it is different that we don't have, for 4 years we had Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, you could throw it to Rui or BC, and they would go at least attack the rim and get a bucket. And then before that, you throw it to Domus.
Yeah.
Or Wiltshire. And then before that, Pargo, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then it was me, and then Dan Dickow. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a real thing to have at least. It's not just a guy that you score. It's just a guy that gets, thrust towards the rim, basically.
Right.
It's going to get you a good shot, a good action.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real concern. I don't know if concern or thought.
Yeah.
A question, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. So I think maybe if you go, like I said, if you go back in time or redo that game, you probably just throw it to Anton and let him go to work, and then everybody space off of that. But again, if Graham catches a couple of those and lays it up, whoa, what a pass. There's our guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Down the stretch, and Andrew makes, or Ryan, sorry, excuse me, Ryan makes more plays. See, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's so, it's make or miss.
Totally.
But that's a very good point, because it's a real thing, and it popped up. It was a real question going into the season, and it popped up in that game. And so my answer would be throw it to Anton. He's your leader. Yeah. And, he's going to at least get something going towards the rim.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other thing I was thinking about is Steele Venters, when the injury happened, I didn't think too much about it. And I feel like it's real obvious in the lineup that like he would have made an impact on this team.
100%.
The
3-point, it showed up in Maui when we went, I think we were 6 of 20. Six or something. We had an 8 for 32 or something, whatever we were. It's just like, oh my God. And when they were doubling Graham, we had no kick out, three.
Mm-hmm.
Not having Steele, but I think Stromer will turn it around shooting the basketball. I think when Nembhard gets his feet set, he's a lot better. Nolan shot the ball really well this year. We have to give him credit.
Totally.
He's had double figure game all but last night's game against Mississippi Valley, but he got pulled early, but he's had a great season. We just have these stretches. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not like we have to light the world on fire and shoot 42%. Like 38, 37 is okay with volume, but we can't go 0 for 9, 0 for 16.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, we had 6 for 26 against somebody in Maui that was bad too. Mm-hmm. Even though we won, it was like, geez, man.
But
this team's going to be fine.
7-2 is great. Or 8-2 now. Is it 8-2? I don't even know. One of the two.
One of the, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's 8. We're 8-2 now.
Yeah.
So
big game Friday against UConn.
Yeah, it's one of those games that if we win, everyone will forget about the
UW.
UW, know,
and if we lose, then
what the heck?
World's on fire.
Yeah, what's going on?
But to be fair, with how the schedule's playing out, and with like no BYU, and then St. Mary's not having a great year, it has a little more juice to it.
Yeah,
as far as tournament resume.
I was going to ask about BYU. It's funny, the year that they leave the WCC.
They're like number 3 in the Ken Palm.
Yeah.
You're like, what the heck? But good for them. Then they figured it out and had to kind of get themselves realigned going into the Big 12. So it is funny. It's like, man, they could have been in our league. It would have helped to, if you split with them. It's still a good win and not a terrible loss, and vice versa for them. You know what I mean? It is funny. It's kind of, I always joke with Huddy. We got to eat crow a little bit because we used to always make fun of them in a good way. Now they're really good. And you're like, oh, darn.
Yeah. And well, maybe we'll be playing with them next year or in the next couple seasons.
Yeah,
who knows?
We'll see. Who knows? That is another episode that if it comes up again, I'll go over the particulars. But
that all kind of died. I feel like that whole thing's kind of died down.
Yeah, I don't. I think they meet every month or so. I don't know how that works, but it always repops up, and you always have to wonder when stuff comes out. It's because somebody wants to come out. Who's doing? Is it us or is it them?
Right.
Or is it somebody's agent? Like, hey, you know, or advertisers.
Right.
You know, somebody. I mean, seriously.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
It stuff just doesn't happen to come out at that level just because it's somebody told them to do it, or hey, I got a story for you. You know what I mean? Like, so anyway. Thanks for listening. Thank you to McGilvery Environmental, Idaho Central Credit Union, and HDG Architecture. We'll see you next week.